Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome, good morning, 11 minutes past 9, a beautiful morning in Johannesburg. Sit back, relax and enjoy. I have in the studio this morning David Sachs, the Deputy Director of the South African Jewish Board of Deputies. And we're going to talk today, this morning, about the state of the Jewish community in South Africa today as compared, say, about 30 years ago. Good morning, David. How are you today?
Morning. Hi, Kudrat.
Good. So, David, just before we continue, we just heard that advert by Howard Feldman about what Margaret Thatcher said. It reminds me of when Ben Gurion appointed Golda Meir to his cabinet. Mm. He made the following remark: Golda Meir is the only man in my cabinet. If you'll remember that.
Yeah.
Right. So David, just let's talk about the community today. As what would you say today as compared to, say, 30 or 40 years ago?
Yeah, there's a tendency in South African Jewry to say that things are always getting worse and to be very pessimistic. Personally, I think, and certainly 30 years ago, that was the 1980s, political unrest, a lot of immigration, especially amongst the young. It was a difficult time for SA Jewry. 30 years later, for all the problems of today, we're much, much stronger, much more confident and much more settled than we were back then.
Yes, and much more from community than there was. The return to Yiddishkeit is unbelievable, particularly amongst the youth.
Yeah. Look, it was well underway in the 1980s, but nothing like what we're seeing today. It's a complete revolution.
Yes, because if you go, for example, to, say, an Osamayach or a Sydenham or any of these big schools, even amongst some of the small ones, so many young people learning and having shiurim, it's unbelievable. And a lot of them are young people in business, but they take off during the day just to learn.
Yeah, and quite a lot of businessmen who have become from are now, you know, working half day and learning half day.
Right.
And as you say, the youth, the Abu Suvonim program every Saturday night. I mean, these big shuls are packed, completely packed with the youth coming in out of Shabbat. The fathers and sons coming in. And I mean, I just think about Rabbi Kosofsky, Michal Kosofsky, when he established Yeshiva College. In fact, it wasn't even a Yeshiva College. It was a little, the Bnei Akiva Yeshiva. And he said, if, 30 years from now, there are 100 youth learning Torah in Johannesburg, that's great. They'll be happy. And can you imagine what he would have said if he'd seen what's going on today?
Yes, if you take, for example, when they opened the Yeshiva College, which is named after his late father, Rabbi Isaac Kosofsky Tzal, there's a campus today of over 3,000. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah.
You wouldn't have been...
And it's an amazing thing about Yeshiva College. It's even during the 1980s and 1990s, when there was so much immigration, it's a school that showed continual growth from year to year, even under those circumstances.
And the Jewish day schools as well, the others as well, they're growing all the time.
Yeah, yeah. Especially the more religious ones, they're all showing consistent growth. So, you know, that's really is the sign of a very healthy and Jewishly involved community.
Yes. But now, what is the position today with Jews in politics as it was 30 years ago? Because I remember in those days, of course, it was only a white parliament, but there were 22 or 25 Jewish members of parliament at that stage. So how many Jewish members of parliament do you get today? Maybe four or five?
No, there's two. Only two for the DA. And, you know, when there was a transition to democracy, there were 10, mainly ANC. You know, the old leftists got in and some became very prominent, like Ben Turok and, Jill Marcus, of course. But there's been a gradual move out of politics by the Jewish community, which is, concerning, because this is a time when Jews really need to get involved at all levels. to get the country back on course.
Yes, in the early days, for example, as I mentioned, there were there were 22 Jewish mayors in Johannesburg following each other. You had 18 members of MPCs, members of provincial council. I can name them all. Yeah. And then you had in parliament, well, quite a lot of Jewish members, MPs.
Yeah.
You know, from the Cape and from the Eastern Cape as well and from Durban. Yeah. They really got involved in politics.
Yeah. And for the opposition mainly.
The opposition, yes. And of course, the leading one was Helen Suzman, who was the sole representative of the then Progressive Party.
Yeah.
But later on, she was joined by people like Harry Schwartz, and then there was Alf Woodman when he became a member of Parliament, and there was Sonny Emden. They, you know, that was later
going on. Further back. You think of Maurice Alexander and Maurice Kentridge, who was in Parliament for over 50 years, which is a record, I think.
Yes, and then also the very first Jewish a cabinet minister was Dr. Hendrik Lachman in the Smuts government.
Right.
And you also had the first Jewish woman was Bertha Solomon.
Yes, of course. She was involved in a pioneer of women's rights in South Africa.
Yes, and she also introduced that third party bill that if you had an accident and you weren't covered by insurance, you would be covered, the Third Party Act.
Yeah.
And Bertha Solomon was very, very, very involved. And then you had in the provincial council, you had Ellen Hellman. I don't know if you recall her. And of course in the local
race relations.
Yes, you had Selma Brodie, who was also very involved.
Yes, yes, she, I think, campaigned in tandem with Helen Suzman.
With Helen Suzman, yes. So the Jews did play a very, very important part. And then, but when it came to running, like, the metropolitans or the cities, you had, for example, Sam Moss, who was the mayor of Johannesburg at one stage, but then he became the chairman of the management committee.
Yeah.
And it really ran as a business. Joburg ran as a business. And as a matter of fact, in the early years, who ran the council was what they call the town clerk.
Yeah.
So I'm sure, do you remember there was a town clerk, there's a park named after him called Mark's Park. He was the town clerk.
Right. Yeah.
And the treasurer was a chap called Druckmann. Yeah. That was Joe Druckmann of the city council. Yeah. So, you know, it really ran. Sam Moss was also the chairman of the Civic Center where they built that the new place up the top of Rissik Street. But
this is all, of course, Johannesburg.
Johannesburg,
remarkable. But you go countrywide, even to the small towns. So many Jewish mayors and town councillors in these tiny communities, and they were talking about 100 people maybe, but they produced a completely disproportionate number of the civic leadership.
Yes, but for example, like I say, Johannesburg, but even in Cape Town, there was a Bloomberg who was there for years.
Yeah.
He ran it. There were a lot of Jewish councillors on it as well. And
Port Elizabeth,
as well. You had, what's his name? Schauder. Very well known there. And in Durban as well. Quite a lot of Jewish mayors as well who followed. But as you said, in the small cities as well, you know, if I can mention the one gentleman, I remember the late Dave Seligman. He was the mayor of Middelburg in the Cape.
Yeah.
And he was there he had two terms. But in all the small settles, you had a lot of Jewish mayors, particularly Ramfontein, I can mention. We're going to take an ad break. We'll be back in a few moments.
Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
So I'm talking to Howard Sachs. We're talking all about the Jewish community today and the Jewish community, say, 30, 40 years ago. But now, just to change slightly on that, David, is there more anti-Semitism today or was it then 30 years ago? Because
I would say that there was a very bad time for anti-Semitism in South Africa, which was in the 1930s and 40s, which was a worldwide trend. The whole world turned against the Jews in a very ugly way. But since then, I really think we've had very low levels, even when the National Party came to power with so many ex-Nazis in their ranks. They moved away from endorsing anti-Semitism, and over the years, they became quite philo-Judaic in a way. So we've never had a major problem, but the nature of the anti-Semitism has changed. prior to the transition to democracy, it was came from the white extreme right. That's what we everybody was concerned about. You know, the AWB and the Boer Bevrijheidsbeweging and all kinds of other little splinter groups. Since 94, it's largely come from the Muslim community, elements of the Muslim community, and we are seeing, unfortunately, a rise in anti-Jewish sentiment amongst the black population, which is something we hadn't seen before 10 years ago.
Yes, but I think the anti-Semitism that's coming from the black population is because of ignorance. They don't really know. They have no idea.
I think that's quite true. In fact, the Kaplan Center for Jewish Studies in Cape Town have just done a survey on black attitudes to Jews. And the fact is most blacks don't know and don't care, which is quite understandable. We're a very small percentage of the population. Those who do have negative attitudes, when you probe more deeply, they're very superficial. They've sort of picked it up in the general culture, but a deep-rooted antipathy towards Jews is, on the whole, absent amongst black South Africans.
Correct. Because I know my own maid as well, when I speak to her about it, she says she gets told all the time about the negative what the Jews have done negatively to the blacks, how they exploited them, etc. And I tried to explain to her that it never ever happened. Mm-hmm. If the blacks were treated, they were treated much better by any other community than by the Jews.
Yeah, by and large, that's true. There were, of course, people, occasionally, but
I can tell you why, because on a Friday night, I can assure you, when we have a Shabbat, our maid will get exactly the same what we have at our table on a Friday night. Okay, but you know that attitude has changed now. But the thing was influencing them is this thing called BDS, which that is making an enormous impact on them, and they don't even know what BDS is. But that's what it is.
Well, yeah, to combat BDS, and it's expensive and it's complicated. But bringing up and coming black leaders to Israel to see for themselves and to meet across the spectrum with Israelis, Arab, Jewish, moderate, left-wing, right-wing, that completely changes attitudes. And they realize they've been had. They've been lied to.
Correct.
Of course, you can't schlep the whole black population to Israel to show them what's going on. But it's encouraging, to see how people can change their minds once they're confronted with reality.
Correct.
And so it's an ongoing battle, but it's really a battle to get the truth out there against deliberately fostered falsehoods by the BDS lobby.
Yes, and of course you've had many cases in the past few months, but they haven't come to, you know, the human rights and racism, etc. But has there been any finality? Have any of them been fined or found guilty?
Look, it takes a long time. I mean, they've just had the John Quilani hate speech judgment has just been issued. It took 9 years. And we got a judgment against Bongani Masuku of Kusatu, also around about 9 years. It is a very slow process, and there are many delays and delaying tactics by the other side. But what I can say is that the Board of Deputies doesn't let go. We're bulldogs, and we'll hold on until we get what we want. We don't drop anything because it's just inconvenient.
Yes, but you know, during the early 60s and 70s, that was the height of apartheid, which we call the Grand Apartheid. The Board of Deputies didn't really get involved.
Yeah.
Can you just give us the reasoning behind it?
Yeah, no, the board was being hammered by both sides. In 1963, when there was the Rivonia raid, and you just couldn't get away from it. All of the whites who were arrested, and these were hardline communists, they were all Jews. The Jewish community and the leadership came under pressure from the right wing, from the nationalists, saying, you know, explain this. Why are many of your people communists? You know, why are you disloyal to South Africa? Why aren't you denouncing these people? On the other hand, from the other side, you're saying apartheid is a crime against humanity, and why aren't you speaking out against it? And so the board was caught in between, and they had to try and take a middle road, and said, we're apolitical, and we condemn breaches of the law by anybody who does it. it was an uneasy situation, and who knows what the right stance would have been. I believe they should have taken a stronger stance against the national government and not been intimidated. But at least they didn't. They weren't intimidated to the point of actually denouncing Jews who fought apartheid.
No, there were a few who did speak out openly from the pulpit, like for the late Labour, Louis Rabinowitz and Ben Isaacson and Dennis Franklin, Selwyn Franklin in Cape Town, and Rabbi Dennis Isaacs. There was a rabbi in Port Elizabeth, I don't know if you know, who was deported because he spoke
out. He was a reform rabbi.
He was deported because he spoke out. Yeah. But the gentleman who first came out against apartheid at a public function where the Prime Minister then was John Foster. Mm. They honored him because he went to Israel, and Yitzhak Unna was then the ambassador, and they gave him a dinner. It was in Cape Town. Was Davi Mann. I don't know if you remember.
But I've heard of him.
Yeah, Davi Mann made a speech, and he absolutely went and attacked apartheid. Mm. That's what when the board changed its whole complete attitude.
Yeah. Of course, the mood in the country was changing by then.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, the board did come out strongly against apartheid, with people like Mervyn Smith, Zatzal, and Gerald Leisner, also Zatzal. I mean, these were very, they were liberal, very strong, they had a very strong liberal bent, and they steered the board in a more left-wing direction, should we say.
And the late Harry Schwartz as well.
Oh, yeah, Harry Schwartz.
Harry Schwartz was very outspoken.
Yeah.
Although Harry Schwartz was appointed as an ambassador to the United States by the Nationalist government, he made it quite clear he's not a member of the Nationalist Party.
Yeah, well, Mandela had been released, ANC was unbanned. It was a very different national party.
It was a different national party. They were really becoming more liberal. Because remember, there were the two brothers. You had F.W. Klerk, and he had his brother Wimpy de Klerk.
Yeah.
The one was Verlich and the other one was Verkrampt.
Yeah.
And they both came from the same home. You know, they grew up in Potchefstroom, the university there.
Mm.
And but the whole thing was changing then.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of his, even P.W. Botha, when he was there, he was also changing,
When he started, he was a reformer. He got cold feet and withdrew, you know, he became Verkrampt after a while, but he started, certainly did some things in the beginning.
In the beginning, but then afterwards he's changed again, become more liberal, because then you had that split in the Nationalist Party.
Well, yeah.
You had the split with Herzog and the HNP. Yeah. They remember the Herzliche National Party.
Yeah, but even more, the Triernicht and the Conservative Party. That was a big split.
Big split. That's what I said. That was the split. But, and he was the one, PW was the one who was already talking of releasing Mandela on certain conditions.
Yeah.
He was the one. Because I can tell you now, the late Chief Rabbi Cyril Harris Zatzal, he met with P.W. Botha, and there was an element who was told that, you know, we're going to reform and we're changing it. You know, as a matter of fact, and I'm sorry to raise this question, a few weeks ago there was a report about some of our Jewish leaders who supported the National Party, and it was not true.
Yeah.
And there was a letter there 2 weeks ago from F.W. de Klerk vindicating the one leader who was, he may have met P.W. Botha, but he never supported the Nationalist Party.
No, he supported Botha's then reform initiatives. It was shown totally out of context, and I was very upset.
We were all very upset about it because I'm not mentioning names, but as I said, you know, they talk out of turn, and things have changed. Now I just want to find out one other thing. Do you think that there's going to be a change? I know it's a difficult question to answer. In this present government, will there be a change? I mean, ANC will be there for a long time, but do you think they will change their attitudes? Because my personal opinion, that if they voted for the president to still be in power, then you're condoning corruption, you're condoning whatever is going wrong today, because everything is all, it's taking from the poor. That's what it's happening today. Everything is.
Well, I think a big, a major indication will be the ANC elective conference in December. A significant minority of ANC MPs did break ranks and vote against the prison government. And it's also said that a lot voted to keep the present regime on the understanding that it would harm the party too much to kick it out now. But in December, we will see. As I say,
yes.
Things are very much up in the air and will be for, it's probably part of the uncertainty of living in South Africa.
Right.
But what we have is worth fighting for. We shouldn't panic and run away at this stage. We'll stay and fight for what's ours and for the kind of society that we all deserve.
Yes, I think that everyone should put an effort in to see, and the Jewish community must stay here. They must. This is a wonderful country, and they built it up as well. You know, they started a lot of industries here. You know, the mining industry was started by the gold and mining industry was started by the Jewish community, and the diamond industry. Mm. And you go into manufacturing, and you go to look at all the big supermarkets and the chains and all the motor industry, the clothing industry, everything. Was built up by Jewish entrepreneurs. I can mention one particular gentleman, I.W. Schlesinger. I'm sure many may remember. He came to South Africa with 25 cents or 2 and 6 pence in his pocket, and he built up this magnificent empire, African consolidated theatres, African films. He had that African life insurance. What about Zebedelia, the farms where they had the oranges, the best export oranges in the world.
Yeah, it was the biggest farm in the world.
Biggest farm in the world. I mean, and then what about Sammy Marks, who also built up
He famously arrived with a box of knives,
right,
which he sold and used, and he built up his empire basically from that.
Right. Yeah. And you take the others who built up, I mentioned the late Mendel Kaplan, his parents who came here, and they started a little making wire gates.
Yeah,
and became Cape Gate, and
Mendel,
today it's an international firm.
Mendel was a giant.
It was a giant.
And of course, Eric Sampson similarly took over his father's business, which was a successful business, but he brought it into an empire. And both of them, of course, were so incredibly generous to Jewish causes. And Eric still is.
And the Lubner family, who built up the grandfather used to go around, and I knew him very well, Isaac Lubner, selling second-hand furniture. Mm. And then Mori Lubner took over, and he got involved with this family called Brodie's in Cape Town, and they had the franchise for PG Glass, Pilkington's Glass. Mm. And that became an international, it was one of the biggest industries in the world, is glass. Mm. Because you're driving a motor car, you've got building a house, you've got to have glass on your windows. Yeah. So they built up. And what about the Edgars Group, the Presses? They built it up.
I didn't know that, yeah.
Yes.
I think Foschini. Do you know how the name Foschini?
The four brothers.
Yeah, but you know the name Foschini. You've told it.
Yes.
Foschini, huh?
Yeah, Foschini. And then I'll mention one other one. You take, for example, the Greatermans Group. There was a gentleman, his name was Harold, it was Herber. Mm. And he built up the Greatermans Group and the Checkers. And then, of course, Raymond Ackerman's father had Ackerman's, a little shop in the, I think it was in Nepal or Paro, and they were selling children's clothing. But then when Raymond Ackerman joined Herber, he opened up the store in Brixton, the first Checkers store in Brixton. And there was a disagreement between him and Herber. And then he went to Cape Town, and he bought from the Golden family Pick and Pay, one little shop.
Mm.
And today, it's all history. So I'll just say the Jews have built up.
I mean, when you can, you've got the hotel industry and Salkirk.
The hotel.
Insurance
and how did the hotel industry start?
Insurance? Donnie Gordon.
Liberty Life. Saul Curzon has started off. His parents had a hotel in Durban called Menorah. It was a kosher hotel. Oh. One little hotel. And then, Saul Kersner went out to Umshlanga, and he built what they call the Oyster Box there, and the rest is all history. Mm. But just to, mention, you said Donnie Gordon. Donnie Gordon started off, he went to the banks, trying to raise money, because when you have insurance, you have to have a certain amount of capital behind you in case there's a claim that you can pay it out. Mm. And none of the banks would give it to him. So he went to one of his auditor, a chap called Julius Feinstein, von Feinstein Kessel, mm. who arranged for him to get a loan from Standard Bank for £10,000 in those days. Mm. And the rest is all history, because the group today in England, they own all the biggest malls in the whole of the United Kingdom. So, you know, it just shows you. Now, yeah. I just want to mention one last thing, David, before we end this conversation, that when Mandela came out of prison, I remember there was Chief Rabbi Harris, and there was quite a few of the leaders from the Board of Deputies, and someone asked him a question, and they said, "Mr. Mandela, how many Jews do you think there are in South Africa?" Hmm. And he said, "Oh, there must be about 1 million." And of course, they told him there wasn't. There's only about 60,000 in those, or 80,000.
80,000.
The reason being, because we've made such an impact in the community, everybody thinks there's millions of us all over. And we've added quality. And there's one other industry we mustn't forget, is that property, that was definitely the Jewish community. Yeah. They really went into
property. And I'd like to mention as well, just because I'm working on it, is of course Izzy Kershen, Radio 702.
2 years.
It revolutionized broadcasting, talk radio.
Yes, 702.
Yeah. Yeah. And his brother Natie, of course.
And also the advertising, Primedia, he started there.
And his son, William. Yeah, that's
yes,
right,
William. Yeah. I mean, we could go on and on. We're taking a break. We're back in a...
Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
Now, if you tuned in, I was talking to David Sachs. Unfortunately, he had to leave because he had a previous appointment, all about the community, the Jewish community today, and the Jewish community, say, 30 or 40 years ago, before the new dispensation, about anti-Semitism and all the contributions made by the Jewish community in South Africa. And we have a texture from a gentleman that says Michael Miller was a hairdresser and started OK Bazaars. Yes, with his brother-in-law, Sam Cohen. And they built up the OK Bazaars, which was the premier store in Johannesburg and throughout the country, so many branches. Today, I know it still operates, but not what it used to be, because it was sold to the Shoprite Checkers Group many years ago. Of course, there were other organizations, other institutions, businesses that were started by Jews, and really the diamond industry, as I mentioned earlier, also the jewelry industry as well, and of course the rag trade. I don't have to go into all those details. The motor car trade, and even in banking, the late Harry Schwartz of blessed memory was the chairman of West Bank, where they used to finance motor vehicles. And, of course, property I mentioned, insurance. I don't think there's any aspect of any business that wasn't where the Jews weren't involved. And how did they start off? They started off as what we call a smos. There used to be peddlers going out in the country, selling their wares. And then, of course, they started little shops and gave credit to all the farmers, the folk in those communities, and then built up these businesses. Wholesalers in Kimberley, in Pretoria, I can remember Katzenelnbogen. In Johannesburg, yeah, you had Elephant Trading, you had Moshel Gefisser, you had Bloch and Company and Pashley's. You know, whatever industry you can think of, the Jews were involved. We're taking an ad break. We're back in a few moments.
Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. Just to remind you that Shabbat comes in this evening, 5:34. Motzei Shabbat tomorrow evening, 6:24 p.m. The Parsha is Shoftim. And of course, we're now in the month of Elul, and they do blow the shofar every morning except for Shabbat. And of course, in 3 weeks' time, it's going to be Rosh Hashanah. And also to remind you that we have the Art of the Cantor on Sunday between 4 and 5. We have a wonderful selection playing music towards Rosh Hashanah. Now, have you got any names that you want to add that I may have left out, that the Jews have contributed to South Africa, please text 34519. And of course, we were also very involved in the export industry as well, in shipping as well. There wasn't a single facet that the Jews weren't involved in. And they came from Europe, penniless, and started very hard. They really worked hard and made sure that their children got a better education and that they didn't have to struggle like they did, particularly in Europe. And when they came here, as I said, they were peddlers. And then a lot of them started hotels. Of course, the hotel industry, we did mention Sol Kersner. And of course, there was the other hotels like the President one in Ilov Street, I'm sure many remember. There was the internet business, which was later on, but was also started by Jews as well. And of course, one mustn't forget the electrical business. There was the famous Mashovsky family who had electric center. And of course, now living in Israel, and I think their youngest brother, Hananya, living in Australia. And the wholesalers that were in Bree Street, right at the bottom towards Newtown, you know, the produce wholesalers, and Food Town, we mustn't forget as well. And then, of course, I don't want to forget my very close friend, Solly Crock, with his late brother, Abe, who they started Twins Products. And they were a household name throughout South Africa. They remember they started selling that, I think it was called Super Rose. It was a cream for whitening of the skin. And they got involved in so many other industries as well. So if you got anything you want to add, please text 34519. And then in Durban, you had the Frame Group. And in Cape Town as well, you also had that famous family called the Oblowitzes, who were in the manufacturing of men's suits. And there was the, remember, Rex Trueform. The list is endless. We could go on and on and on. Wherever you went, there was Jews involved. And then in Durban, you had the famous brothers. Let's see if anybody still remembers, who were doing the biggest export in the world of metals. I'm sure many remember them. Well, if you don't, it's the Lazaruses. Remember Gunther and Bernard Lazarus. And if you've got to add anything, please text 34519. Just to remind you that this program is repeated on Sunday, just after 9 a.m. And as I said, it Art of the Cantor, Sunday afternoon 4 to 5, Talk of the Town, Tuesday between 9 and 10. And by the way, on Tuesday, I hope to have someone in the studio, and we're going to talk about this report now on the chicken prices, because we got a text earlier just said a gentleman was on the committee for three meetings and then was never called again. And he disagreed with some of the facts that are being presented. So I hope to have someone in the studio next Tuesday morning to discuss the chicken prices. Now, all that remains for me is to thank Craig for controlling, to wish you all a Shabbat Shalom, a wonderful weekend. Take it easy, relax, and enjoy the rest of the week.